Sometimes we have gems every now and then, Sky, where we just like go off our rants and we never record them. So yeah. Anyhow. Alright.
I think I could tell back to Man of Steel. Back to our Man of Steel conversation. Yeah. I think I could tell I wasn't enjoying it that much. Like I was, or at least I wasn't engaged by what was going on because I was just having a lot of fun with the movie as opposed, or like at the movie as opposed to with the movie. It was hard for me to kind of, my concentration just wasn't there. I was having too much fun with my friends watching it as opposed to being like, man, I'm really into this superhero movie story right now.
There was a lot of like phallic symbols on Krypton as well, and I was like, wow, that's interesting.
Dude, Krypton was like awesome.
I was such an awe
because it was like, I did not expect that in any way.
Much of Krypton?
I just didn't know what to expect from the movie in terms of like how it was going to be structured. Like I had an idea, but I wasn't like, I didn't know how much origin we were going to delve into, which apparently was all of it. But and then some, because there's way more Krypton than ever. But I was fascinated by like how, like for being this movie that's like both a Zack Snyder movie and like godfathered by Christopher Nolan, whatever that stands for these days, like it was such of like, well, I guess that's the answer to that question, because it's like, this is crazy. Like Russell Crowe just like free falls onto some giant dragonfly dragon thing. Like
Avatar
like,
style.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, what movie am I watching? Like, this is crazy.
And also like he has like a lot of extraordinary, hand-to-hand combat skills.
Yeah, his CQC was no question. Don't fuck with Jor-El.
Like, yeah, no, you shouldn't, yeah. He's apparently like one of the head council guys, so yeah, good for him. One of the things I had a problem with was you're kind of like, with chronology, when it first started, I was like, oh, this is cool, you know, it's Kent like flying into Krypton. It's like, oh, it's actually just going into a really quick shot of him saving these people on this oil rig. I was like, I don't know if I like that, because it's like, oh yeah, he's got superpowers and super strength. It's like, okay, and then it just flashbacks all these times, like the school bus, and then like everything just triggers some kind of like PTSD in him. It's like, okay.
Yes.
Yeah. So good for you, Clark.
I didn't want to mention this on the podcast, but what I thought was funny about the all the product plugging, it's like so much of the advertisements seem to go, come see this place so you can die here.
Smallville got fucked up in that movie. Like, Metropolis, I get it. Like, I can, as much as I'm against the idea of, like, all this destruction that needed to happen in a movie about Superman where his prime goal is to save the people. I could see the argument of why we needed to have it in Metropolis and why it needed to be that big, because we have to show the scale of superhero fighting and stuff. But Smallville got fucked in this scenario. Like that, like they don't have an economy. They can't sustain themselves after this. All they have is like a corn silo and trains. And guess what? You fucked up both of those things.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I'm so glad, because I was like, you know, like comically, yeah, sure, this is cool. Like Superman's just really strong. But yeah, he messed up the corn silo, and I was like, dude, that's like years of farming, and then he messes up the Sears, and then they just mess up all of downtown.
And his childhood buddy, like in the IHOP.
Yeah,
like...
and the IHOP too. Yeah, it's like, what?
Well, the funny thing, it's not really a criticism per se, but when you first see Pete working at IHOP, I assume the implication must be, oh, that's sad. He never made it out of Smallville.
Yeah. Kind of what
He was so traumatized by what happened in the bus never really adjusted.
Yeah.
And then I went, oh wait, that's right. IHOP paid a lot of money for this. And then it gets blown up.
It's blown up.
Oh,
and then Superman gives
IHOP, come for the pancakes, stay for the fiery death.
Superman gives him that like little wink, and the movie is just trying to force that humor on you. It just seems awkward. It's like, oh, you get it, you see, because he's his friend.
It reminded me of like what was that movie with Charlize Theron? Was it Young Adult?
Yeah.
Where it was just like, his friend just, the small town people, they just never leave because they just can't go anywhere. And I just felt really sad. Like, you know, like there's like, oh yeah, like you can talk to this one guy when the people are like, yeah, he works over there. And it's like, shit, he works at an IHOP. Like, this is kind of depressing. Like in a small town world, it's like, yeah, sure, it's cool product placement. But at the same time, it's like, when you think about it, it's like they're in a small Kansas city and the guy works at an IHOP. And then, I don't know, that was actually kind of registered sad to me on a huge scale.
He shoots it that way. Like it has such a all the Smallville stuff is handheld. It's very noticeable too, because that's the only time where the action's just like, whoa, this is pretty close. But you have this kind of like rugged feel of like, this is Smallville, all right, and it just has that look to it, that sheen to it. And Kevin Costner's there giving his sage advice, wearing his Lee dungarees, and that's the commercial that I'm watching. Wait for Johnny Cash song to start playing or something.
No, I won't back down. Yeah.
But what was I going to say? Everybody knows he's Clark. Like, no one. This, yeah. This, like, what's the point of this? Like, what are we doing here? What,
yeah.
What? Why have an identity at this point? Like,
well, I mean, most people, you know, his enough people know he's Clark to make it kind of weird. But yeah, not everybody knows he's Clark.
Yeah,
I still think there is a use for a secret identity in the broad scheme of things.
I'll be curious how they treat it in future installments, but I mean,
yeah,
like, I would agree with
all
that
of
too.
Smallville is like sending in letters, guys, like, how you doing? Like, that's what I get from this. Like, no one's mistaking the idea that Clark Kent and Superman are not the same people. It's like, and, hey, that weird boy he's over in Metropolis now. Like, that's,
yeah, he's writing stories for the Daily Planet. Hmm? And I had a question about the Daily Planet scene, which is like, does. I'm assuming that Lois doesn't know that that's Clark, right?
She does. She clearly does.
Oh, yeah.
She knows.
Clearly gave him that look at the end. Like, that was all of that was in her face.
Okay. All right. Cool. Because I was like, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. You mean to tell me that she's been talking to this guy, writing a story about his origin, and then he's gonna put on glasses, and she's gonna forget who he is?
The movie went out of its way to tell us that this is a different Lois. That she's much she's much more capable of digging into leads and
putting
answers and putting two and two together. Yes. Yeah. And that. And her look to him at the end very much is like, yep,
okay.
I guess you're here now, huh?
Yeah. I was okay with that.
You can finally deliver on that random kiss you gave me at the end of the movie.
Yeah, exactly. That was such an odd placement for a kiss, which is like, there's no chemistry. There's nothing being built. And then it's all of a sudden like, you've saved, like what you had said, Scott, you've saved me numerous times from falling to my death. I guess I should just plant a kiss on you now?
And it completely wrecks her credibility as a reporter, since she's doing this in front of everybody.
Yeah.
So now she basically, she's making out with her big story.
And then
basically sleeping with a source.
And then you think it's almost at the end of the film. It's like, oh, wait, hold on, General Zod's there. He apparently didn't get sucked into the black hole like everybody else.
Well, no, he wasn't in the ship. He was in the other ship.
Yeah.
Which is still like, you know, you still have like 20 more minutes of movie. And then, like, we had said this in the theater or in the review as well, which I had a huge problem with, was they never actually confronted the issue of all this destruction, right? They never say like, oh, well, you know, now we have to rebuild, like somewhat like in the Avengers. I think in the Avengers, they actually, you know, you see Stark Towers kind of like cleaning up, and then Stark, you know, they make all these announcements.
I mean, the argument like there is that it's not that movie. I mean,
I agree.
I know what you're saying, but I mean, I could see. I mean, I don't. Another 10 minutes to divert, you know, 5 minutes devoted to us like watching like some big announcement that Metropolis will rebuild. I don't know if I needed that or not, because I've already saw it, so I'm gonna have the same reaction regardless. Acknowledging it wouldn't make much of a difference to my reaction to how much destruction happened, and I would like, if anything, wisely, I think a sequel would capitalize off of that aspect of having all that happen, like what the aftermath was because of this.
But I really didn't like the way that they ended the film, which is you see this drone and you think that it's a missile, and I again, like what you had said, it's, you can't even distinguish if this is still part of the same sequence or if it's part of something else. And then it's just like, yeah, surprise, you're not going to be able to follow me because I am Superman. And it's just like, if I want to escape, I can escape. It's like, and then it's like, yeah, he's kind of hot. And it's like, what? Like, where did this movie go? What? Like, this doesn't make any sense at all.
Oh, there. Okay, I was trying to, it's like, what scene? Oh,
yeah,
with Commander Locke from The Matrix hanging out and the girls.
I was thinking
playing Commander Locke again.
Right, yeah.
Henry Lennox is a good actor, but he does that role
well.
He's
also in Star Trek, I think Voyager, or is it Deep Space Nine? I don't know, I forget. Yeah, it's just, you know, there was a lot of stuff that I didn't really like about some of the action sequences, and apparently that was like where they're making their bread and butter, because so people were wanting to see.
There was a lot of Zod punching, that's for sure.
Which didn't make any sense how he broke his neck at the end,
broke his neck.
Yeah, but is he stronger than Zod? No, they're like equally matched.
Yeah, so you can, I mean, a human breaks another human's neck.
I suppose.
I mean, him being the same strength doesn't mean that he can't beat him. The idea, I mean, when, again, the arguable reason of why we needed to see this fight is that Zod is a force to be reckoned with, and he has no other goal, because Superman wrecked any chance of there being a new Krypton or whatever he was trying to, the terraforming, all he has to do is just take anything he can from Superman and just push him to his limits, because that's all he has in him. And so that's what he's driving Superman to, because Zod will not stop. And that's the point he's trying to make to Superman, so he has to either kill him or join him. And joining him is obviously not the reason, so Superman just has to kill him. That's the idea of this. Do I need to see 20 minutes of buildings falling down before that happened? Maybe, maybe not.
Well, and think how much more powerful that scene would have been with the threat of collateral damage if we hadn't seen them ignoring the thousands upon thousands of actual collateral damages.
Yeah.
Because it's a great scene by itself.
Yeah.
You know, how people are bothered because Superman killed the guy. Well,
he's killed a guy before.
It happens every once in a while in the comics.
Well, I pointed this out to a friend of mine on Facebook who were like going back and forth. But like, he kills Zod in Superman 2. Like, and if anything, it's less provoked. Like, he just kind of pushes him down to like a pit of death and just like, and then destroys the Fortress of Solitude. This movie, you could argue like plead insanity for Superman because he was fucking really pissed off. That movie, it's more calculated murder that he did in the optimistic Donner film.
I do think it's interesting, you know, everybody likes to bag on the Transformers films, and for some good reasons, but the climaxes of 1 and 3, you know, one in L.A. and the other one in Chicago, every blockbuster now rips that off. You know, you got Dark Knight Rises, The Avengers, now Man of Steel. You know, it's weird. You know, people like to bag on Michael Bay, but he sort of set the template for how you end a big-scale action film in this day and age. Huh. And arguably, he did it as well as anyone else has done it.
In terms of large scale city destruction. Yeah,
exactly.
Because I can think of other movies. Okay, but I see the point that you're going to. Yes.
Yeah.
Just because we have the effects now. I mean, Oh, the trailer I just got an email. It's Scorsese's movie has a trailer now.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. I'll watch that later. But I mean, the Terminator movie, well, they're not really citywide destruction, although that car chase in Terminator 3 is pretty crazy.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
What else?
That tornado scene.
That one was cheap, and I do agree with you. I didn't really want to say it on the podcast, which is like, it's cheap because it's...
Let's go over the setup of this scene. Let's go over the entire setup of the scene. So they're on a freeway.
First he has to make sure that Kevin Costner realizes that that's not his real dad. It's like, okay.
They're on.
I can never respect a man whose hero is a criminal.
They're on the freeway. There's a tornado coming. We have to get everyone else. There's the dog. We need to save the dog. Why is Pa Kent the one that, like, he know, like, he doesn't even have to be super to do it. Like, he just,
They did a better dog saving scene in Independence Day.
It just felt what point are you proving? And like, even at the end, like, everyone knows he's Clark at this point. It's like, it makes it all work. It just negates it.
Well, and that's the thing, is he never has to make a choice to be or not be Superman.
Yeah.
It is thrust upon him. He's put in a situation where great evil is about to occur, and he can, with relative ease, stop it. Well, what else is he gonna do?
And it's actually easily set up for him too, especially when he magically discovers a cave of like forgotten dreams, and then he goes in there, and then Jor-El's just like, "Hey, here's your suit." And it's like, okay, I guess I'm gonna be this man now. It's like, no, you had 33 years of internal conflict with yourself saying, should I do this? Should I not do this? My parents told me it's going to be really bad if I do it. And then all of a sudden he's like, yeah, no, that's cool. My real dad told me that I should do this. Like, what? Like, no, like I had you never really get a sense of like that huge morality play and internal discussion that he has with himself in the later half of the movie, because he solely accepts it.
It's done in very broad strokes, which is the problem. it's all on the surface. It's all, yeah, well, you had drama over. Let's move on.
But I did really enjoy the fight sequences of that girl, because again, it shows how superior she is to humans. She's just fast moving, and she's like knocking them out. I love the sound effects in those scenes where she's knocking out those army guys. This is really cool. And then I was kind of expecting that Superman was going to do the same thing in the IHOP, but no.
I liked it as an alien fish out of water story. I think there was some fun stuff done with the idea of them not being used to Earth's atmosphere versus Clark, and then Clark not being used to Kryptonian atmosphere. I think it had some fun with the building up of the Kryptonians versus Clark Kent. I like that how it was handling this stuff. Although I don't know, Jor-El had a pretty fun plan of just shooting Amy Adams out into space and hoping Kal-El would catch up with her and save her.
Why exactly was she on the spaceship at all?
I asked that every time. Every time we pointed back to Amy Adams in the scene, I was in the theater. I was just like, "Hey, so why are you here again?" Like,
Especially like when the person's like, hey, you know, are you the commander in charge? It's like, he's also requesting her. It's like, why? What is her purpose?
Why?
She's a reporter. She hasn't. You haven't seen her do anything beyond like follow Clark into this this spaceship and just get knocked out.
Yeah.
It's like, what happened to her? Nothing.
And she doesn't even serve any purpose being on the ship.
I mean, what? Well, not for the Kryptonians. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she just serves a purpose as like
there so Clark can fuck up their plans. Like, exactly. It's like, well, why do we invite?
And she gets that hilarious laser gun shootout scene where, again, this is again like a video game where you know sort of shoot here, now shoot here, move there, yeah. up down down left right. Okay, 30 lives.
There was a restraint to Russell Crowe that I enjoyed though. Yeah,
I did agree. With that.
I thought he was fine in the film. I just, you know, for a guy that dies in the opening scene, he just wouldn't go away.
I liked it. Well, I mean. Again, this comes down to me just not caring about Costner at all. So I'm like, I need some parental warmth here, and I'm getting it from Diane Lane, but something else. And so Russell Crowe is hitting for me.
That was a really nice point you guys have brought up, because I hadn't thought about it, you know, how Diane Lane is basically the family center, the familial center for Clark. And
I mean, it's like,
many times in the film. And I actually, when you guys have brought it, I was like, yeah, that is actually really heartwarming. Like, even when Zod is going to go and hurt her, he, you know, Superman comes and saves the day. He's like, don't hurt my mother and stuff. And I was like, wow, that's really nice. You know, like, he actually has these feelings for his parents and he feels a need to protect them. And I was like, that's nice.
Yeah, but Scott, I would slightly disagree with the Spider-Man one, just because I do, despite the fact that, yeah, he's doing things because his father got shot, so now he has to be Spider-Man. But I do think Aunt May is a very pivotal.
Oh, no, no, I mean his actual parents.
Oh, Richard Parker, the Tiger?
Yeah, he's all, my father did this research, my father did this, and blah, 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 blah. Where his actual mother, she's a non-entity.
True this. I can see
true
that.
True dad.
But yeah. No, you're right. Obviously, Aunt May is a huge part of the Spider-Man films. No, I did not mean to imply that. I meant it's actual parents. I mean, even the official synopsis was, you know, he goes looking for the secrets of his father and finds himself. I guess
Superman 2 attempts this since Marlon Brando wasn't in it technically, and so they had to bring the mother in.
Yeah, by default.
Scott, did you see This Is the End? You didn't see This Is the End. Yeah.
Not yet.
I'll be interested to hear what you think about it.
It was one of those situations where I there's a friend at my daughter's kindergarten that wanted to see it, which is great, but now I have to wait till they're available. It's like, damn it, I can't just sneak out by myself and see it.
But yeah, regardless of the comedy, I think there are some other interesting aspects in there that I'm curious.
That's what I've heard.
I'm curious to see how you'll kind of parse it out.
Interesting.
What else? Oh, yeah, I'm seeing World War Z tomorrow night, so that should be interesting.
Nice.
How was Monsters U?
It's fun.
Colorful and fun.
I think you and I have the same opinion of Monsters Inc. Where it's good.
Yeah.
And I think this one is equally good. I think Monsters Inc. has an automatic win just because it has one of the best Pixar endings of any of their movies.
Yes.
Regardless of all their other films. So I think I don't think there was any way Monsters University was ever going to top it. And I'll just leave it there because Abe and I will talk about it next week.
Yeah.
It's colorful fun. That's for sure.
Yeah.
It has more of the throwaway background humor than I've seen in most Pixar movies. So. I've missed that. So.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else? Nope, that's pretty much it.
VHS 2, good. See the one.
Oh, man, yeah. Wait, Scott, did you see that yet, or did you just download it?
Downloaded it. I haven't watched it yet.
Okay, yeah. What did you think of VHS?
That was okay.
Yeah.
I really liked the segment with the webcams.
I felt that was really sad.
That was certainly the saddest one. Yes.
Yeah, not, it wasn't horrific. It was just like, man, like, everyone just thinks she's crazy.
Yeah. She has horrible wounds all over her body. Like,
yeah, it's just like, oh, man, like, what the hell? Like, I didn't even care about those alien kids and, like, her being tracked. It's just more of like, people are never going to believe her story. And, like, now her only hope, the guy that she's been online dating is like, I guess I'll just see you later. It's like, man, this is, bumming me out.
That one had some of the most interesting ideas in it. I don't know if it wasn't the favorite. Well, I'm trying to think of the other one.
The one where, like, the honeymoon one where they're trying to get
that was my favorite one. Yeah, the honeymoon
one. Yeah, that one was, like, that one was really spooky.
I like Ty West's pacing in his movies, so I just, I dig that stuff.
And then, the bookend storyline's just not that great in VHS, but People said that was really good in VHS 2, so.
It's better in VHS 2. Like,
oh, it's better.
It's better. Okay. I mean, there's less. My problem with VHS is you hate everybody in that movie. Like, you start the movie with these despicable guys that are, like, what, sharking people and, like.
Yeah, those assholes, yeah.
It's complete assholes, and you're like, God, I gotta follow this. And then, like, the first skit is, like, dude's night out, let's fucking pick up chicks at a bar, let's go rape these chicks now, and then she's, like, a succubus or whatever. That's horrible. But, like, you just hate these people that you're watching. So it's, like, you have, like, 30 minutes of a movie where you just hate everybody in it, so it doesn't set you up very well for it. This one doesn't have that. This one it plays around with the characters more where you're like, all right, I actually want this person to live this time. And in the case of one of them, I was incredibly sad by how it ended. So I'll say that. And you'll know exactly what I'm talking about when you watch it.
Okay. Sounds good. Yeah, did you guys see the trailer for Insidious 2? Still Insidious?
Still City?
Nope.
I watched it, yeah.
I figured it'd probably spoil the crap of the movie anyway, so I'm going to avoid it.
True, yeah, you probably should avoid it.
I don't know. I don't think I can't remember the first trailer for the first Insidious, but
I'm just curious.
Give away a couple big things.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't think I watched the original Insidious trailer. I think I was just kind of, and I tend to be like that now. Anyway, with these horror movies, I tend to be just like, hey, I'm just gonna not watch the trailer and just be trying to.
Yeah.
Ever since the Cabin of the Woods, essentially. Well, before that, I guess, because that was Insidious, but Cabin of the Woods, especially, I've been like. Since then, I've been trying to avoid certain horror trailers just because I know they just give things away.
I don't know. I think trailers in general are also starting to just give things away too. It's just
but there's certain ones where something with like Man of Steel. It's not something that I feel like is spoiling things for me when I see the action that happens in certain movies. I feel like there's going to be a context that will make me appreciate it more. So I'm just happy to see this is one of the money shots. That's cool. All right, I'm into this.
Right.
With the horror movie, there's only so much you can show before making your mind wander when watching said horror movie about what certain twists can. I don't know. To me, my mind makes certain connections for certain movies that doesn't for others, I guess.
Yeah. Interesting. Scott, are you watching anything else this week or besides just World War Z?
Yeah, just World War Z.
Okay. Have you seen any of the independent films that Aaron and the other guys talked about last week?
I saw Before Midnight, which I enjoyed.
Okay.
As you guys have both seen it, right?
I haven't yet, but everyone's been giving very high remarks.
I liked it, but I did not like it as much as a lot of other people did.
Mm.
I think the first two were better.
I like Sunset the most, I would say.
Yeah. But it's fine. I'm not going to bash it. I like Mud, a little long. A little thin compared to Take Shelter.
Very, yeah.
But
interesting.
I do like where it eventually goes. It just takes a while to get there.
I have issue with the ending, kind of, but yeah. But in terms of certain,
yeah,
there's a generic aspect.
Haven't seen exactly. It yet. Yeah, haven't seen it
yeah,
yet.
Yeah, yeah. Thematically, I like where it
yes,
goes.
Yes, I agree with that.
In terms of his treatment of his female characters.
Interesting.
And I like The Place Beyond the Pines. I didn't think it was great, but I acknowledged it's somewhat contrived at this. But again, it's a good movie. It's something you want to encourage. I'm frankly, and I know someone said this on the podcast, it kind of annoyed me. I've heard this elsewhere too. It's like, oh, you know, it should have been a trilogy. It's like, no, I want movies to just be a big movie, not, you know, don't give away the quality high ground of television. You know, if a movie can tell this big sprawling story in 140 minutes, I don't necessarily need to see a miniseries or a trilogy or a television series version. You know, let the movie be the movie.
I agree that it might be interesting, but I do agree. I think for what it's trying to do, I think it works as a film.
Yeah.
Yeah. If anything, I felt as though the movie that Aaron and I have seen and you haven't, Scott, you know, This Is the End, that could have worked as a bunch of funnier die skits.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just continuation of it, but hilarious. Yeah.
I think it's interesting that it continues Ryan Gosling's streak of playing absolute assholes that are supposed to be sympathetic.
He's trying to make it right.
Yeah, but he's not just a bank robber. He's a mean, violent bank robber.
Yeah, and what'd you think of in the third act? What'd you think of the characters in the third act? Mainly, not Dane DeHaan,
little,
but the other
a
son.
A little contrived, but it didn't bother me.
He's just such an asshole.
He is!
Yeah,
yeah. Bradley Cooperson, that's like Aaron and I talked about this. That's the only thing that really throws me off from making this movie like, oh man, you have to go see these movies. That kid is such an asshole.
It's not just that he's like a bad kid or he's like a bad Z. It's that he's such a bad Z. Like, he's just, it's so emphasized. And the accent's there. He's doing young Brando. It's just weird.
Yeah, I just want to, like, strangle that kid and just, like, slap the shit out of him and be like, dude, like, you're ruining this movie for me. But that's how they acted, or that's how they want him to go, so.
Then Dane DeHaan becomes Young Driver and...
Yeah, right, yes. And then he goes up to Washington and develops these powers.
I saw Violet and Daisy, which was...
Oh, how was that?
I had a screener, otherwise I wouldn't have bothered. Yeah, watch it, what's on video, don't, you know, it's cute, they're cute, it's a relatively limited film, but, okay. You know, again, I got a screener, it's like, I'm not going to spend the time to write a bad review of this. Okay. If they want to complain that I ever wrote it, well, they just won't send me a screener again, whatever.
Because I remember seeing the trailer, and I was like, this looks interesting, yeah. Like, James Gandolfini is like a hitman that's supposed to set them up.
No, they're
girls.
Yes, they're set to kill him.
Yeah, and then he's just like, yeah, well, you know, I'm just going to... philosophically talk to you guys while another hit's being put on you, and I was like, this is interesting.
Basically, yeah.
And but it got panned.
It's not very good. Yeah. I mean, it's I want to see it because I like them.
Yeah, I like Saoirse Ronan.
Way to say your name right, Abe.
Yeah, no, she's awesome.
I'm like, giving you props. It took it took you a couple years, but you got it.
Yeah, Saoirse.
I'm trying to think what else I've seen. I saw this. It's a Disaster. I enjoyed that.
Oh, I heard that was actually really like...
What'd you say? I didn't hear you. What?
It's a Disaster.
It's a disaster. That's one I wanted to see. I didn't care. Where'd you...
Yeah, that's
one
with David.
It is?
Oh, VOD.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That means that it's available on Torrent.
True.
So I might check it out. That's one with David Cross, right?
Yes.
David Cross, yeah. Julia Stiles, a lot of people.
Rachel Bilson.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think what else I've seen.
Did you watch?
I have been enjoying comedic end of the world movies as of late. So
yes.
Did you watch The Purge yet?
By the way, what?
The Purge.
Oh no, not yet.
You didn't see
The Purge. Wait for DVD.
Yeah, that's a movie.
That's one my wife will watch.
I got to meet Steve Carell the other week because I was doing interview stuff for The Way Way Back. And it took every ounce of me not to, like, just say how much I love Seeking a Friend for the End of the World, because I just couldn't find the right opportunity to say it, but I really like that movie. I really wanted to.
You should just compliment him at the bagel table and be like, hey, nice.
I should have. That was my, I mean, in retrospect.
That would have been your end.
Like, essentially, Scott, I was at a way, way back junket, and I didn't know Steve Carell was going to be there. I knew everyone else was going to be there, like Sam Rockwell, Allison Janney and stuff. But I was in the hospitality room, and I was like getting like some food. And I turned around, and Steve Carell standing right behind me getting his tea. And I was like, oh, God. I didn't say anything. I just like, oh, that's, right. I acknowledged his presence, and that was nice. But in retrospect, yes, I wish I could have said something.
Did you see The Way, Way Back?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Any good?
Yeah, it's very much a standard coming of age comedy drama, but And there might people. I could see people finding issue with the lead character, but for the most part, I think it's just a very fun. I think it has a lot of fun characters. I think it's a strong coming of age story effort. I liked it more than Kings of Summer.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. I haven't seen The East. Obviously, I haven't seen The Bling Ring yet.
Bling Ring.
Let's see. Otherwise known as Spring Breakers 2. Or conversely, Spring Breakers, the prequel, or whatever.
There's an interesting essay that I actually want to. I want to write, and I've been outlining that concerns these things. But
hurry up, because other people are.
I know. I just did so. So little time. I might do it since I've already seen Monsters Inc. And I'll see WWZ soon. I'll maybe have time.
I assume it also include Pain and Gain, right?
It does. Yes.
Yeah. What else? Yeah, that's pretty much everything. Obviously, we're seeing The Heat on Tuesday.
Oh, okay.
Not next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday.
And I haven't heard it. You know, they said they'd go back to me on White House Down. We'll see. I mean, I'm taking Allie Despicable Me on Thursday the 28th. Did you get an invite for that? If not, I will forward you mine.
Yeah, sure, because I did not get an invite for that. That's Universal, right?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe I'll check my spam really quick, too.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
But no, I doubt that I got that.
And, yeah, and then we'll see about who do you go through for Disney now that Chris is gone?
I deal with
Marshall Mathers.
Yes, Marshall Mathers, Marshall Weinberg.
Because I got an invite for Monsters, probably the same one you got. And I wrote them back saying, "Oh, good, I have a new contact." Got laid off, unfortunately.
Oh.
And there's no nice way to say, "Sorry, you're getting laid off. Who should I bug now?" you know, there's no nice way to do that. And then, yeah, so hopefully Lone Ranger, obviously not. My mother-in-law really
Lone Ranger.
Wants to see that.
Yeah. That looks...
And frankly, after that last trailer, so do I.
I'm excited.
That should have been the first trailer, not the 20th.
I've been excited.
It's almost like for those films, I basically have so much trust in Gore Verbinski that
yes.
Like I'll just watch whatever he's gonna make because I loved Rango, I liked the pirate series enough.
Yeah,
it's like just go ahead, lay it on me, big guy.
The Weatherman,
which is surprisingly sad.
The Mexican,
which
is a much darker film than it was sold as.
Mouse Hunt,
which is one of the great films of our time.
And, I forgot The Ring, because I'm the one person that doesn't like The Ring.
I like The Ring, but whatever.
Everybody's too mopey in that movie for me. And it's very and it's very green. Just green horses coming out and people being like,
But no, I'm a fan of Verbinski. I've been defending him for years from that bastard Rob Marshall. Let's see. Why does he keep getting work? No one likes his films.
Rob Marshall?
Yeah. And why does he keep getting huge casts that... I mean, he got a bad performance out of Daniel Day-Lewis, for Christ's sake.
Hey, Rob Marshall tells great jokes. That's what I assume, because everyone loves working with him. I don't
know. Oh, okay, yeah. I don't know, have you seen Nine?
No, I didn't see Nine.
Oh, my God, it's awful. Awful.
Just looked like a lot of like women yelling at Daniel Day-Lewis.
And
I'm not down for that.
Yeah. It's garbage.
No one yells at Daniel Day-Lewis.
There's women yelling at Daniel Day.
I have to dash.
All right.
Okay. Thank you as always, and I'll be in touch.
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome. Thanks,
Take care.
Scott.
See ya.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. Diner Dash.
It's a new iPhone app.
No, yeah, that's a fun game. No, but for This Is the End, it was funny. It just was, it's kind of long, like right when you realize that there's no real plot besides them just trying to survive for many days on hand.
I mean, that's the plot.
Yeah, and then it kind of got into the Evan Goldberg, Seth Rogen typical storyline. Well, not typical, but I feel as though they do it a lot, which is the friendship thing.
Well, it is. That is their thing. I mean, as much as Judd Apatow likes doing things about family and you know, forming a family, creating that bond and sealing that bond, Evan Goldberg and Seth Rogen go off of friendship because that's
friendship.
They're in that age range where that's what they write, what they know, and they know where the heart is, and that's what they know how to write about. I know what you're saying. That aspect doesn't bother me at all. That's something I expected from it. Actually, I was going in thinking.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No,
I was just thinking this is going to be a goofy off the wall comedy about like a bunch of guys like trying to survive, and then.
I mean, I've seen Superbad. I've seen Pineapple Express. Those are movies.
You saw 50-50.
Yeah, they didn't write that, but those are movies about friendship. I mean, that's what they are, and that's what I expected. I wasn't surprised at all to have a sentimental aspect seen in this movie.
That was the only part that kind of was like, oh, well, yeah, I guess. Because they were just, you've seen that before, especially, I liked it a lot better in Superbad I kind of didn't see it coming, but at the same time, I knew that it was there, like that angst of, hey, man, you're just holding me back, like all the time. It's like, you know, we're going to go to different colleges and you're just way smart. And it's like, oh, wow, this is actually kind of sad, heartbreaking in Superbad. And then here it was just, it's not that it was a bad thing. It's just more, oh, okay, well, this is what they seemingly tend to do.
I mean, this isn't an Apatow produced movie, but that's what I expect from the Apatow gang. I mean, there's always going to be, forgetting Sarah Marshall. I mean, all these, they have heart in them. They're not just throwaway comedies.
Yeah, that's why I like them a lot too. But it was just funny. You had mentioned like the Apatow gang, and I was like, that's really funny that all the Apatow guys like die like right in the beginning. It's like Martin, the really awkward guy in Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah,
and then
Martin Starr. Love him.
I love Martin Starr. The only guy they didn't have was their buddy whose dad cheats on his wife in Freaks and Geeks?
Oh,
Sam?
Sam Levine, yeah. Well, he's not really in the gang that much.
Oh, he's not?
I mean, he did Freaks and Geeks and he did Undeclared, but he's not in any of the movies.
Yeah, I was wondering why.
I mean, the key, like everyone in Knocked Up is a key, that's the Apatow gang. Knocked Up is the best example of where they all are together. Because that's all of them. They're all living together and using their own names. Like, that's literally it.
Yeah, but I mean... I actually really liked how they made like Pineapple Express 2, And I was like, oh, this is actually really funny.
I mean, if that wasn't the April Fool's trailer, then I would have liked that more. But, I mean, it's still funny.
And I totally forgot that Craig Robinson was in the movie. And then I was like, oh, wait, he's the hitman.
See, yeah, and I said this earlier to you, but I love Pineapple Express. So I was watching it during the week before I saw This Is the End anyway. So I was just happy.
And then, quite honestly.
I love Pineapple Express and I don't smoke. Like, and I love that movie. It's a quotes, but it's a stoner comedy. And that's not anything that appeals to me. It's nothing that I do. It's just something I generally enjoy in the movie. I just like these characters, and I like that friendship thing. I like that James Franco wants to hang out with him because he needs a friend. I like that Danny McBride makes certain choices because he doesn't have friends, and he's like, he wants to be cool with one guy. And it's like there's such a fun camaraderie in that movie, especially at the end where they're all like after they're shot up and fucking bleeped to death, they're at like a restaurant talking about, like, as if they're talking about some cool movie they just saw. They're just talking about the action scene that they got into, and like that's just hilarious to me.
Yeah, no, he's good. And quite honestly though, for This Is the End, it got really long when it's like the exorcism of Jonah Hill, and I was like, man, this is a long movie.
I know what you mean, because it does have the feeling of skits put together at points as opposed to forwarding a plot.
Yeah, and the reason why I kind of enjoyed it still is because I actually like all these characters. I like all these actors. It was like, oh yeah, I guess I'll continue watching it because I like these guys. If it was like something else, I would be like, no, this is awful. Like, I don't know who these guys are. I don't care who they are. This is just really long.
It definitely adds by having them as themselves in this movie, playing off a certain persona. Danny McBride, by the way, I love Danny McBride, and killing it in this movie.
I agree with that.
Even people that like hate Danny McBride, I like to think that he got a smile out of some of them, because I know there's a lot of people that don't like Danny McBride, but I think he's so good in this movie.
No, I love Danny McBride. You know, you and I love Eastbound and Down.
Oh yeah, that seals it. But he gets not one but two epic intros into this movie. It's like so hilarious to me that like he gets like
when
his first
comes out of the bathtub.
He comes out of the bathtub and he's like making breakfast.
Just, like,
it's all smoking. Ocean.
And then
it's
he makes like the little bird thing over the food.
It's like the
hands.
Most epic fucking breakfast he could possibly make, and it's just so much. And then he gets another entrance when he's like,
yeah, with like the Jordans,
the fucking the awesome song, the rap songs playing. It's like he's holding a skull in his hand. Like, it's like, what?
He's got like a flesh head on him.
Oh my,
like,
god, that just, I couldn't, like, that was so much, like, fun.
Quite honestly, I think that besides Jonah Hill, who is seemingly sort of played a character,
Michael Cera.
Michael Cera. But Danny McBride, I love Danny McBride in this movie because he's playing his asshole self that people think he is, like, from all the Eastbound and Down, from all, like, the other, like, movies that he's been in with the Apatow gang. It's just, like, that's hilarious, because I don't know how he is in real life, but it's just more of, like...
I've met him once. He's a really nice guy.
I saw him on, like, I think I saw him on Letterman or something, or some talk show, and he's, like, he just seems really nice. So it was hilarious the way that he's, like, you know, playing, like, his jacked up, like, fuck you guys, like, I'm gonna drink more water.
Well, that scene with him and Franco, it kills me. It's on YouTube too, so I get to relive that again and again because it's so funny. It's
coming
just,
scene.
Yeah, it's just, like, it goes on so long. It's like the rake scene in fucking Simpsons of Sideshow Bob. It goes on it goes on so long where it's not funny, and then it's just hysterical again.
It's
round.
It's not overkilled, Family Guy would do
it. Like, everyone's pulling their weight though. Like, Craig Robinson might be like the sleeper of the movie that no one's like talking about nearly enough, because he has some great, like, just asides. This like where they're talking about like actors, and he's talking about how hard it is for like actors.
Yes.
Like, he's like when you say it's hot when it's really cold, and you're on the beach in your drawers, talk about everybody going surfing. Like, it's so like.
And then he's like,
talk about everybody surfing.
And you think they were hard, but we're not.
He has so many like great little things going. That's why I want to see this movie again. There's so many jokes I think that are happening that I just didn't even like connect at the time. I just feel like,
I think the only thing that's holding me back from seeing it again is just that weird cacophonous, like, oh, here's like the end of the world kind of thing. It's like, oh, it's kind of loud, and it's kind of more of a personal thing. It's just like, I could totally watch 21 Jump Street again. I could totally watch like any episode of Eastbound and Down again. It's just more of this one. It's like, yeah, I saw it, and maybe it's because I didn't like the first time around as much, so I didn't kind of continue with it. It's just, I saw it. It's okay. I did like how they made a bunch of references to movies that were bad. Like, we should make like they're like, yeah, let's make Pineapple Express 2. But yeah, don't make a sequel of Your Highness. That movie sucked. And I was like, how sad, because they're like there's like that weird rape mentor scene and kind of like Jonah Hill's bed scene, which was kind of a play on Rosemary's Baby.
It's shot for shot Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah,
that's the thing that like one of three people are going to get every time.
I saw it and I was like, this is funny.
Less than that, one of a theater full of people are going to get, because it's and Mark had it too, because me and Mark were talking about it a little bit. Like,
yeah,
it's dead on exactly the scene from Rosemary's Baby. Like, it's literally shot for shot. It's like, even the line that he has, this is really, mine is a giant penis. He's like, this is really happening. It's, and I was just like, oh my God, they're going there. And no one's getting this in the theater. It's just,
yeah, I know. And I was like, wow. Like, and part of me is also like, I actually like the Backstreet Boys references. I actually like when Jay Baruchel first comes to Seth Rogen's house and then they just party up to like some Backstreet Boys song, and at the end too. But my theater just seemed like they were a little bit too young for them. They're like, who are these people? And I was what? This is hilarious.
I was into it to an extent. Again, I was so into the full friendship angle that everything at the end was just like an epilogue that could have ran over the credits, really. Like, that's,
yeah, I agree, like, with
it. Could have ended there, and they could have
all those heaven scenes.
Yeah, you could have like started the credits up, and then you have that kind of play on the side as the credits are going, and like go let that go, because that I feel like thematically the movie ended for me. It would have ended stronger if it just like cut the credits and then had that playing like in the background, like, oh hey, this is what happened to these guys. Although,
yeah, this is what happens in heaven.
And like what threw me off was like for Evan Goldberg and Seth Rogen and many of the stars in this movie who are all very Jewish, I was like, this is a very Christian movie that we're watching.
Yeah, I saw that on your tweet and I was like, I don't fully understand that, but I saw the movie, I was like, yeah, there's like no hint of like Jew at all. Like, no one says like, oh, like, you know, I don't know
no,
what
it's
to
just,
say.
It's straight.
But
it's
yeah,
straight
they
up.
Have like no talks of that. Yeah. It's like, no. Oh.
And so now
I didn't think about it until you had brought it up, actually.
Because it just really stuck out to me, just because I think about it. And like, but like, and now this past week, I've been getting clarification because Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg have been like on every other podcast, like talking about the movie. And so they've talked about how they just went with what they thought frightened them as when they were coming up with rapture ideas. And like, as kids, they had fears of this like image they'd see if like Jesus on a crucifix and just like end of the world imagery and rapture stuff that associates with Christian theology. So it's like, that's why they chose that.
That's kind of the road they went
just
down.
Because Jews don't really have that. We don't have this depiction of the
Book of Revelations kind of thing.
No, we don't have that kind of end of the world imagery to associate with. While Christianity does. So it's,
yeah, to be fair, I mean, like, I was spooked up by some of the they're not really jump scares, but just like,
oh no, my dad jumped when the fucking Ghostbusters dog jumped onto the window.
Oh yes, like, no, I did too. I'm glad that you brought up Ghostbusters dog, because I was like, that looks exactly like the demon in Ghostbusters.
It did completely did. Just mark about that too. Like, we like it just.
But I mean, like, you know, like when Craig Robinson is just like trying to get the water outside, and like, you know, you just hear things in like rustling by. I was like, holy shit, this is like kind of spooky, and then. He just does his Kirk Robinson scream, which is hilarious. And yeah, it's just, I like the movie enough, but it's just, there was just something holding it back from like me, like really raving. And because when I left the theater, I was just like, really? Like, so.
Sorry. You didn't have a great impression.
The infinite
work on the end of the world is just crazy to me. Like, the demon dogs running around, giant cock demons walking the earth. It's,
right, yeah.
Such like a, like this giant heavy metal
with, like,
album.
Seven heads, yeah. Oh, my God. It's like a Meatloaf album.
It is. And it's like something Spinal Tap would do. And I was really getting into that stuff. It was like, geez, they really went all out for a movie that has like no budget.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, I could totally tell because they were just stuck in James Franco's house, and then the only time that they're actually out is when you have them in the Prius, and then that's it, right? Because that's like basically the end of the movie.
Channing Tatum coming in.
Channing Tatum was hilarious.
I love him.
Yeah. I was like totally a cameo that I was like, holy shit, that's Channing Tatum.
I like how
they talk.
Because like
they talk about him in the beginning.
They're
like,
set it up,
God,
and they all set it up.
Boyfriends with Channing Tatum now. It's like, what? It's like you're kind of half expecting him to see him in the thing.
I like how it's clearly like it's like back and forth between some guy that's in some S&M outfit, then just him in hat, and then back
like,
to
I'm
best
sure,
Hector Rex guy.
It's like, I'm pretty sure that's not Channing Tatum's ass being perked up in the sky. And like, there's probably like, they probably just had him on the set for like an hour. He's like, hey, let's just do a close up shot of you hugging Danny Bride's leg. And then you saying one line, and you're done for the day. We'll just have like stand-in for you.
You know, before This Is the End started, I saw the trailer for Don John played.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention this. In Yeah, good vibration. I forgot to mention this in the thing, but when Jiggles goes to the theater to like see a romantic comedy of ScarJo, the movie that's playing is like some random fake movie that stars Channing Tatum and Anne Hathaway. It didn't click with me enough to like reference it the first time, but I saw this and I was like, oh, that's pretty funny actually that they're doing that, especially Channing Tatum. No, I noticed it, but it just didn't like register to me enough where I'm like, oh my god, this is hilarious.
Yeah, no, I saw that. I was like, that's funny because these guys would be doing a romantic comedy. But no, that just that when I thought about that when we were talking about the trailer, I was like, oh wow, this is cool. Like Joseph Gordon-Levitt has, you know, he's got some credibility. You can ask people to be in his movie, and they'd say yes. You know.
Yeah.
So good for him.
Cool.
Anyway. I was looking at the weekend here. It looks like World War Z and the Monsters, Inc. And then it kind of dries up a little. Not crazy much, but I think those anticipated...
No, it doesn't.
What comes out after that? I was looking at Rotten Tomatoes.
Lone Ranger comes out after that.
The week after?
White House Down and The Heat comes out the week after. Then Despicable Me 2 and Lone Ranger. And yeah, then Pacific Rim.
Pac Rim, yeah.
Oh my god, I saw that because Fruitvale Station comes out also.
Oh yeah, you know, you had mentioned that. Like I remember you saying that in the you mentioned like the anticipated movies of the summer, and I actually saw the trailer for that before I listened to the podcast.
Yeah.
Because I was watching it on the Movie Box.
I saw it when I saw Kings of Summer. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And I was like, oh my god, they made a movie without Oscar Grant. And I was like, oh shit.
Yeah,
like
it didn't register to me that it was there. That like I kept hearing Fruitvale Station, like, all right, that's a movie that's probably gonna be good, I guess. And, but then like I was like, oh, it's The Part. Like that's what like, I didn't think of this.
I was like, oh wow, this is interesting. It's like that looks like oh my god, they're gonna make a movie about Oscar Grant. And every time I stop by Fruitvale now, because I have to pass by it every day, I'm just like, oh, this is kind of depressing.
Like, the trailer's like, let's just make this so Aaron wants to see it. So it's like, let's have Michael B. Jordan.
Really? Michael B. Jordan?
Let's have this actress Melanie Diaz that he likes. Let's have a Root song playing over it, because why not? Let's have Octavia Spencer show up. Let's mention Forest Whitaker. It's like, why? What? Why? Like, everything about this makes me want to see this movie.
Watch this movie.
Like, apparently. I'm like really excited for this movie now.
Yeah, it's such a divisive case that I'm not exactly sure. Like, I don't really know... like how I feel about the case in itself, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not exactly sure like who's right, who's wrong, where the blame should be put. So I'm kind of not huge going into it, primarily because I think that it's kind of more focused toward one side rather than the other. And I'm not saying that this person is right or wrong. I'm just merely saying
that I like to think that a movie getting huge praise out of various film festivals probably has more to say than just lean heavily on one side, though.
Yeah, and like this is like the director of it is like an Oakland native, and it's like his first time directing, and people said that it was really good. And I was like, interesting. So yeah, cool.
I have Danny McBride's intro or that's the rap song playing in the background on my headphones. That song. That beat's just so good. I love the drop of that beat.
Anyway, all right, yeah. It's a good episode.
Yeah,
we went long on
this.
No, I'm recording all of this. Yeah. This is our after session.
Yeah,
that we're gonna put up on the Podomatic page. Anyway,
let's see.
anything else for now?
No, I gotta go watch Mad Men so I can.
So you can tweet a new spoiler.
I gotta get my Mad Men spoiler. How
John wears a sweater vest.
That's our friend True Blood spoilers now too, because I don't keep them.
Yeah. Oh, Veep, I gotta catch up. Anyway.
Veep's really good this week.
It is. Oh, this week? Oh, okay. I like last week, the furloughs.
Or was that? You're like two, three weeks.
The furloughs one was good. Anyway. I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Alright, see you.